Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. About a half hour from now, Kevin will tell you about the beautiful Kia Soul he is driving this week from Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Who do you have this week? Shikellamy is playing Central Mountain.
Yes, we go up to, it's not technically Lock Haven, but in that general vicinity, Mill Hall. Is that right? Mill Hall?
Yes.
Yeah.
Home of Vaughn Walker.
I have never been at the Central Mountain Stadium, but I understand I will have a great view.
Fabulous. Hopefully it's of the field. All right, Zach Osterman, IU insider for the Indianapolis Star. Very pleased to have him on board. Hi, Zach. Welcome to the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, we'll start with this. Nate Sudfeld and Jordan Howard, two pivotal people in what Indiana wants to do. How up in the air are they for Saturday's game?
You know, I mean, I think it's probably day-to-day, best described as day-to-day right now. I think Kevin Wilson takes about the same attitude toward injuries and talking about injuries and reporting injuries that James Franklin does.
Yep.
He said both players were dressed out for practice today, but for him, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean they were full go. But at the same time, both of those guys being veterans, being, you know, pretty well established in the offense, I don't think they're necessarily guys that need to be full go and, you know, on Tuesday in practice.
Agreed.
To be ready for Saturday game. So, I think there's as good a chance as not that you'll see him Saturday. You know, I think the tough thing, and this is more me just kind of spinning it off as sort of an educated guess or whatever at this point, you know, with ankles, it's one of those things that it can be very hard to diagnose how quickly something like that heals. So I think that might be the big question for Wilson. But my guess is that if they're not ready this weekend, they'll be ready next weekend. But obviously, you know, for the purposes of our conversation, this weekend is what matters.
What has Sudfeld's return meant? And also, Howard, who had big shoes to fill in Tevin Coleman, but brought an impressive resume of running from UAB, and he had 11 100-yard rushing games before he ever got to Indiana. What has that 1-2 combination meant to how Kevin Wilson wants to play football?
Well, I think, I mean, for Sudfeld, it's the senior leadership aspect of it just as much as obviously he's a very good quarterback. You know, interestingly, I had a friend that covered the Manning Passing Academy this summer. He said that other than Christian Hackenberg, who was pretty clearly the number one guy there, he felt like Sudfeld looked as good as any QB he saw out there. So, I mean, technically and physically, he's as good as of a QB as Indiana's had in a while. But he's also somebody that just sort of very much, I mean, his teammates very much take their cues and their keys from him. He's even-keeled. You know, you hear his coaches talk about him. He's kind of a coach on the field. He's just kind of all the things you want a senior quarterback to be. And so I think having him gives Indiana not just obviously a good quarterback, but also a really good leader on the field. And in Howard, I mean, you're right. He's not really the same kind of back as Tevin Coleman. He's not nearly as explosive, but I think in some ways he might even be better for a quarterback like Nate Sudfeld because he's a little bit more regular. You know, Coleman's threat was that explosive play ability and the ability to just kind of, you know, make touchdowns out of nothing, you know, and just sort of just outrun everybody. Howard is much more of just kind of a grinder back. So is Devine Redding, who he splits carries with. Howard's the clear number one when he's healthy, but Redding will, even if Howard is healthy Saturday, you'll see it Redding for probably 15, 18 carries as well. And those are just guys that are comfortable going up between the tackles, lowering their shoulder, falling forward, getting 4 yards, 5 yards, 4 yards, 5 yards. Sudfeld's not the most mobile guy in the world, so I think having kind of that consistent power run game is better for him as well. So, I mean, obviously, if you've got one of the top rushers in the country statistically, even with such a quiet game against Ohio State, that's good. But I think that it maybe even complements Sudfeld's abilities even more to have those two guys back there. Not that Coleman was by any means a slouch or a bad back. No. It's just kind of a different running game this year than it was last year. Two different ways up the mountain, so to speak.
Zach, when I did last year's game out there, Xander Diamont was the starting quarterback, and I felt as a runner he was absolutely a plus as to what was going on, but felt he had a deer in the headlights look when it came to the passing game. Saturday when I watched it, it looked like a different guy. What has made, you know, I realize he hadn't played until then, but what do you think made him a little bit different? Did the experience really pay off that much for him?
I think it did to a certain extent. And I mean, I think, you know, look, the reality is freshmen, and I think he's even admitted this to a degree, freshmen, much less freshmen that aren't that big physically, and he wasn't last year, you know, are going to struggle in high-level college football. I think that you could see, I mean, he's always kind of been a confident kid, but I think you could see more, not so much confidence in, okay, I belong here and I have these abilities, but confidence in understanding the scheme, the, you know, the play calls, run pass options, all those different things. Just confidence that maybe physically, you know, mentally, from a preparation standpoint, he just kind of generally belonged. He's still not, I mean, he's a different quarterback from Sudfeld. He's obviously more mobile. He ripped off the 79-yard run against Ohio State. I don't think he's as accurate as Sudfeld. At the same time, I do think you'd have to evaluate him in a game when Indiana was running the ball a little bit better, because, I mean, if it's Ohio State and you're not running the ball, then he's going to be facing, you know, stacked boxes and blitzing linebackers all the time. So I think it's encouraging for Indiana, and really it's encouraging in a way, too, because Kevin Wilson said in the preseason a couple times that, you know, one of the reasons he was really paying attention to the backup quarterback race was, you know, they need to figure out what they're going to do beyond Sudfeld because he's a senior this year. And I think it's hard. It would be hard not to look at Diamont's performance against Ohio State, albeit a very sort of brief window, as something more encouraging for the future. Because, again, you know, I mean, whether it's Sudfeld not being able to go this weekend or obviously preparing for life without him come, you know, next spring, Indiana needs some strength and some promise at that position.
In watching Indiana over the years, I never really felt that in the trenches they could compete at the highest level within the conference. How much has Kevin Wilson's recruiting changed that thought?
I mean, I think it's changed it significantly, and that's kind of what made the Ohio State game hard to, you know, analyze in a way, because on one hand, you're not able to run the ball very well. On the other, though, you score 27 points and you put yourself, I mean, their run game was almost non-existent, really, outside of a couple big plays. Obviously, Redding had a couple touchdowns. But you're still able to be in a position to tie or maybe go for a win in that game with the defending national champion. So, I mean, that says something about the growth of your offensive line, being able to protect in the passing game. And then defensively, how do you evaluate a game where you give up those three big explosive plays to Ezekiel Elliott that are basically the difference in the game, but then other than that, you pretty much control the line of scrimmage, you force a couple turnovers, you force Cardale Jones into some bad mistakes, never really let him get comfortable. I think it's, you know, I think Indiana's a lot better along both fronts. I don't think there's any question about that. And obviously, I guess the other caveat you throw in is when you're facing the defending national champion, are you going to see anything better, more talented, deeper, whatever, you know, the rest of the season? I think Indiana's a lot better. I think Indiana still has a ways to go to really be maybe considered, you know, one of the best defenses in particular in the league, a long ways to go. But I think that it is head and shoulders above what it was along both the offensive line and the defensive front seven, really, as a whole, not even just the line, but the front seven, from where it was when Wilson took over.
They're a +9 giveaway takeaway right now, and they have 48 points off of those takeaways. Yet I heard Kevin Wilson's press conference, and he seemed a bit concerned about the lack of big plays, and also he was concerned about his special teams against Ohio State. How do you view those two elements?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the turnovers have been very helpful, and you've seen maybe Indiana's offense even switch on a little bit more. I mean, Indiana scored a couple touchdowns on defense already this season, and you see their offense maybe even a little sharper when they get the ball back off turnovers. I think his big thing is Indiana has always been able to create explosive plays on offense.
Right.
Whether they be in the pass or the run game, that just hasn't quite happened yet this year, or at least not with the regularity that he wants. Some of that's probably obviously replacing someone like Tevin Coleman, who was, you know, just sort of born to produce explosive plays, with a more sort of power-based run game. I think some of it, though, too, is that we still maybe haven't seen the best of Nate Sudfeld and his receivers. And I think that there is, I mean, I absolutely would agree with Wilson that that offense hasn't quite gotten into fourth or fifth gear consistently yet this season. And that's probably one reason why, if you're Indiana, you're really hoping that you don't miss Nate Sudfeld for too long, because as tough as this month is with Ohio State and trips to Michigan State and Penn State, November, I don't want to say it's a lot easier, but November is not quite as tricky. And so that's kind of when you want to be hitting the ground running. And I think that's a lot of what Wilson's talking about. And then on special teams, I think he was largely just kind of disappointed with the Ohio State game. They didn't cover kicks all that well. They did, I mean, they had basically no punt return yardage. Their kickoff return was not very good. Their punter was inconsistent. They did make a couple field goals, have a couple nice plays.
Right.
But ultimately, I think he's always hammered since he got to Indiana on, you know, basically being able to win the game in all phases, not just being a dominant offense or a dominant defense, but that teams that are really good are going to make a play on special teams to win the game, create a couple turnovers to win the game, have a, you know, make some offensive drives after defensive stands to win the game, all those different things, stitch together a whole, a complete performance, if you will. And I think that he feels like, perhaps not unfairly, if Indiana had done a little bit more of that, we might be talking about a win over Ohio State.
Right. Zach Osterman is the IU insider with the Indianapolis Star joining us. The game was a sellout, 52,000 plus at Memorial Stadium at The Rock. Of course, it's the number one ranked team. It's Ohio State, and of course, Indiana came in undefeated. But are you sensing that they've made some progress within the state, Zach, that Indiana football is gaining some traction with some fans?
I think so. I think that's absolutely true. I mean, I think it's a combination of maybe it feeling like this team was kind of what Wilson was building toward and recruiting, and obviously it hasn't been perfect. I mean, they're starting freshmen and sophomores in their secondary, and, you know, they kind of needed to – they sort of stumbled into Jordan Howard. I mean, obviously they did a good job of recruiting him, but you can't predict that a program's going to shut down the way UAB did.
Right.
But at the same time, I think there was a feeling like, in general, you know, this is kind of entirely Wilson's team. It is as close as maybe he's ever going to get it to being his quote-unquote vision. And I think that, you know, you start 4-0. I mean, that's the first time Indiana's done that since 1990, a big state school. You know, Indiana's a basketball school first, and it always will be, but a big state school's got a lot of alums. It's got a fan base that usually is very invested and passionate. And so if you give them a reason to be excited, I think they're going to turn up. And I think you're right that last week was maybe good timing in the sense of being undefeated, it being Ohio State, it being a nationally televised game, the sort of tongue-in-cheek effort to get ESPN Game Day out. But I think there's also just a feeling like, I think people just look at this team, frankly, and they see a better Indiana football team than they have in a while, a more complete team, a more veteran team. And even when you lose to Ohio State the way they did, I think it's hard not to feel like that's somewhat justified, because, you know, you saw that team lose its starting running back, its starting quarterback, give up a bunch of big plays, and still, again, be right there at the end of the game with a chance to tie or win.
Zach, going into this game, and looking at the matchup of Penn State Indiana, what is your peaked interest going into the game that you'll be watching for in this one on both sides?
I think that the biggest thing is frankly Indiana's offense. I mean, yes, it put up 27 points against Ohio State, moved the ball fairly well. They got to run the football though, and that's whether it's Jordan Howard or it's Devine Redding. And I think that. I think that as good as Ohio State is, I think Indiana would gladly tell you that, you know, that their offensive linemen, their tight ends were disappointed maybe to look back and realize that some of the lack of a running game was their own mistake. Because if you run the ball, if you're Indiana, I mean, they've only given up, I think, 3 sacks on the year. Obviously, you know, Penn State has given up, has 21 sacks already.
Yes.
As a defense this season,
yeah.
Best in the Big Ten.
And NASA has 8, yeah.
you've got to run the ball to soften up that pass rush a little bit. And then if you can do that, then you theoretically anyway can open up the pass game. As good as Penn State is on defense, if Indiana really can get its offense moving, and that's a big if because it's at Happy Valley, a place Indiana's never won, and all the statistics tell you this is a very good, maybe something turning into something like a borderline vintage Penn State defense. But if they can get the ball moving and get on the scoreboard quickly and often, can Penn State keep up? Because I know Penn State's obviously had some question marks about its own offense. Hackenberg is an incredibly talented quarterback. You would imagine that against a very young secondary, he's going to make some plays. He's going to move the ball. But for me, if Indiana can turn this into a high-scoring game, and again, I repeat, that is a big if, then I would at least like their chances to again be there at the end of the game. You know, I'm always hesitant to predict wins and losses with a program that's been to one bowl game since 1993, because there have been plenty of moments where it looked like Indiana football was ready to turn a corner, and quite frankly, it ran into the curb instead. But I think that if you can get that offense going, if you're Indiana, if you can dictate the way the game is played through that offense, then I think you would feel good about your chances. But Penn State is so good defensively, and in some ways maybe this is an ideal start for Indiana to see probably two of the best three defenses in the Big Ten and three of the best four within the first 4 weeks, just to get a feel for what works in the offense, what needs to improve, because again, once you hit November, I think that's when you start to hit some of those more winnable games, Maryland, Purdue, Iowa. You can really start to think about not just a bowl game, but maybe, as Indiana fans or as Indiana players have talked about, controlling your postseason destiny a little bit.
Zach, an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for the insight you gave us. And is that your dog?
Yeah, I work from home. Those are my dogs. My coworkers call them the interns.
Well,
so I'm actually upstairs. That tells you how loud they are from there downstairs. But well, when you have two St. Bernard mixes, they'll make themselves heard.
That is great. What a great dog that is. Hey, Zach, thanks so much. And tell the interns that we enjoyed having them on, too.
I'll do it. Thanks so much. Sorry about that.
Oh, don't. I'm kidding around about it. That tells you something. Thanks, Zach.
Have a great day. Thanks for having me.
Zach Osterman, Indianapolis star, and the two St. Bernards. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, welcome back. Great to have you with us. Hope you found our talk with Zach Osterman to be informative about Indiana. Zach seems to have a really, really good handle on the program on the day-to-day basis and why they're off to this 4-1 start and what has worked for them so far and what hasn't under Kevin Wilson. And they will be here Saturday at noon. It's the annual homecoming game at Beaver Stadium, and we'll be on beginning at 10:30 here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Meanwhile, Bucknell back home. They will get Lehigh on Saturday as well at Christie. And Shikellamy is at Central Mountain on Saturday night at 7. Kevin and the Chief on the air beginning at 6:30. Coming up on Thursday, we'll have our high school football roundtable. And get the thoughts of the respective announcers on the game that they're calling. It looks like Selins Grove is off to a dynamic start this year. And, of course, they're on Eagle 107. So, bottom of the hour coming up in news. Did you see the mini scandal developing in the world of FanDuel and DraftKings?
Yeah. I guess they can't play their own, like employees can't play their own fantasy right. game, but they can play the yeah. competition's fantasy game.
Well, one of the DraftKings guys won a lot of money in FanDuel. Look, it's a guessing game, all right? I know that, look, most of the big players, let's face it, most of the big players play this the same way you play the lottery. Or the same way that some of you play the ESPN bracket challenge. Some of you do really well in the brackets. How many brackets do you put in? Well, the same thing happens in FanDuel and DraftKings. The big players put in multiple brackets. five-player combinations with the idea that one's going to hit. It happens all the time. And evidently one of the DraftKings guys played FanDuel, and he won. Now, it's not my world, so I really don't care.
Well, I think the big issue here is you have somebody who has a lot of inside information and can look at the,
Kevin, who a lot of winning, successful guys are picking. Kevin, what inside information?
You can
What's inside information? You can see what successful players are picking. Kevin, guess what? What if you put in the combination of Tony Romo and Dez Bryant one week and they both got hurt?
I understand where you're coming from, but you still have some inside information.
What inside information? Do you know ahead of time how well somebody's going to play?
No, you can look at what a lot of the successful players are picking and mirror that. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to be a guaranteed win.
Oh, come on. That's FanDuel and DraftKings. Who cares?
This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back to the Kevin Hurst Show. There's been a coup. Yeah, Steve will join us from the Sunbury Motors studio soon. And if he doesn't, it becomes the Kevin Hurst Show. Hey, we haven't talked a whole lot about the Major League Baseball playoffs, but it appears there's a wee bit of a controversy. And I'm not sure how much of this is just ESPN looking for something to report about the baseball playoffs, or if there is a little bit of a controversy. But it appears as though Matt Harvey, the Mets ace, missed a mandatory team workout. He later apologized to his teammates for the unexcused absence, which happened because he lost track of time. He said after arriving at Citi Field, obviously today was not the greatest. I know we had a mandatory workout. The last thing I ever want to do is not be here with my team. Basically, there's no excuse. I screwed up. I wasn't there. I showed up a little late. He said he talked to Sandy. He's talked to the manager, Terry Collins, and my teammates, and apologized to them and apologized to everybody. They understand I'm here to get my workout in and be with the team. I give him credit. You know, he manned up about it and said that, you know, I made a mistake. I'm just wondering, you know, he will be fined for missing the workout. Mets manager also indicated that Harvey was called to say he was, that Harvey did call and say he was stuck in traffic.
Yeah, sure he was. Yeah. Aren't they all?
Well, listen, I give him credit for saying, hey, listen, I messed up. It's my bad. You know, but I think the only thing that makes you suspicious is when your manager says that you called in and said you were stuck in traffic.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey, I was stuck in, I'm late. I know it. I'm stuck in traffic. It's my own fault. I fell asleep. Whatever. Is this really a story? That's my question.
Yeah, it's a story because it was a mandatory workout.
Right. He's going to get fined.
Okay. It's a mandatory workout before the National League Division Series. And because it's a mandatory workout, it raised suspicions, especially considering the situation with his agent about innings pitched and so forth, about what his status was. That's why it caused a problem.
Okay. All right, I understand that then. That makes a little bit more sense to me. But I just read that today, and I'm like, why?
Do you follow sports?
I try not to. It's too confusing.
Wait, do you follow what's going on? No, just kidding you.
I try not to. It's too confusing.
Cindy's at home. Like, don't do that to him. We love him. See, there's love for you out
there. There was another really ridiculous story that I saw today that I know what it was. There's a former Patriots player now saying that Belichick practiced the proper way to handle batted balls. Really? I know it's easy to pile on Bill Belichick right now and the Patriots because of all the issues they've had over the last couple of years. But really, now somebody's coming out and said, oh, yeah, they used to have us do that all the time.
I don't care.
That's my point.
I don't care. I mean, you can say anything you want about anything you want.
That's exactly my point.
Today we're in a situation where people say what they think all the time. So I'll give you a really good example of this. Okay? This individual says after the Rutgers game. Okay? Zettel is reading his own press clippings and not performing up to standard. Okay? That's what he said. This isn't a reporter. This is a fan. And I very politely said, I don't really think you know what you're talking about here. He goes, look, I said, look, he didn't play, you know, great game against Rutgers. And then I very politely said, yeah, but he was in Michigan all week. His father's dying.
Right. I was going to say there's a little story behind that. And it's like, ooh.
And all of a sudden, it's like he became ashen when I said that. Now, I did it politely because I know they didn't know. But I remember one time my brother asked me this. He said, what has surprised you about your job? Is there any surprise about your job at all? You know, because he said, I know you wanted this job your whole life and the whole thing. And, you know, every time I hear you say, you talk about it, it's like, it's great. Yeah. And the job is great. He says, is there anything that ever surprised you about it? And I said, yeah, there's one thing that really surprised me from day one about it. And he said, well, what's that? I said, what people don't know. And he said, really? I said, yeah. Said there are a lot of assumptions made, a lot of accusations made, right? And part of what you have to do at times is understand that somebody may not know something, that they don't have the same information you have, don't have the same access you have. And so you got to kind of keep your cool about it sometimes. You know, it's not as if everything that's said is off base. That's certainly not true. But there are a number of things that are said where you say, just, you know, what you know and what you think you know are two different things. And I told him, I said, that's the biggest surprise I've ever had in this job overall was what people, is what people don't know. Or what they assume and the assumption's incorrect.
What they think they know.
Right. And I appreciate the interest in it, that people want to know, that people are engaged and so forth, and that opinions are opinions. I understand that. But sometimes there's an explanation for something, and that was one of them, that one particular moment. And it was, you know, and I believe me, take my word, the person that said it to me is a really nice guy, but at the same time, And I was very polite about, like, hey, you know, hold on, you know. And that was just one of those moments. And that's just an example, and it's not far from other examples I could give along the way. Or like, you may not be quite right. It doesn't mean everything's wrong. I mean, not everything out there is wrong. But that's always been the biggest surprise about it to me. Because I'll hear, because obviously you hear things, people come up, they tell you things, you know, all the time. You know, and you're like, no. They kind of explain it. You're like, okay. You know. So it's not, you know. And there are a couple, you know, it'll be the same thing this week probably on a couple things too. But, you know. I also realize that I am exponentially lucky to be in the position I'm in to actually to know. How about that?
There are a lot of Penn State fans that would love to know what you know on a weekly basis.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, I do. I do. Listen, it's easy to make comments and judgments when you see the bigger picture or the whole picture, if you just look at it on face value. I've been guilty of that more often than I care to admit.
Right. No, and again, I'm not putting anybody down that has an opinion, not in the least. I'm just saying that, you know, I'll hear things sometimes. I'll go, oh, no, I don't think so. Well, you don't quite have that. That's not quite. There's a little more to it than you realize. You know, I'll think that, like, oh, just hold on a second. Just slow down. You know, I don't get critical of like, oh, God, you know, listen to this. You know, we're, you know, he's going to take his head out of the hole there, you know, okay, and kind of look around here like, come on, what are you doing? Okay, there's the sand. Get your head out of it. Okay. But I don't think that. That's the other part. I've also found that over time, I also understand that, okay, how would you know unless you know what I mean? And so I've always had taken that tact of understanding too. I think as the years have gone by, I've become more patient about that. instead of like, what are you talking about? To like, oh, okay, hold on a second.
I understand that comes with kids and grandkids, patience.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying, it's a particularly. When it's perceived that the team is not playing well, the opinions are stronger and greater. Does it mean every one of them is off base? No, of course not. You know, but there are some where you sit back and go, whoa, hold on. Just slow down. Okay. Here's the reason why behind that. Now, are there times where I can't explain it because I'm not allowed to explain it? Yes. I also freely admit that. All right. I also freely admit that there's one particular, you know, I mean, you just can't. But you do the best you can in those moments to explain certain things. I try to take the pregame show. And for example, Doug will call the show maybe this week, Doug from Wellsboro, and he may ask about a couple of players. Now, Doug made the same call in the pregame show this week, by the way. Okay. Well, when Doug made this call on the pregame show this week, that was Saturday. It was before the game, and I had all the information he was looking for as to who was in and who was out. You know, I could tell him before the game, okay, Barkley's not going to go. Lynch is not going to go. Bell's not going to go. Allen's not going to go. Schwann's not going to go. You know, so I was able to at least tell him before the game, you know, as opposed to having the ability to tell him on Friday when he called. Different day, different circumstance. So,
you know, and I read a lot about Saturday's game. Different fans that have, you know, different reporters and stuff that have been, you know, have talked a little bit about the game being a lot. Let's put it mildly, a lot closer than they expected. But
sure, absolutely. Everybody, the game was for every single person that watched it, including
me and Jack, the game was closer than we thought it was going to be. But, okay, we all think that. I think the coaches probably thought that too.
Well, but that being said, look at the guys that were missing, and then go back to something that I know you have stated about 5 million times over the last couple of years. There's still a recovery period with the depth on the team.
Right, but Kevin.
But that's going to go away eventually. Okay, but it's not here today.
But Kevin. As realistic as that is, the fans don't want to hear that.
Well, and being on that side have all the information, I understand right. that. I've been that way before.
But the fans don't want to hear that. I think I've stated they have 78 scholarship guys. I guess they have 77. So it's 77 right now. All right. And people don't – we're in an era now. Take Texas, for example. Charlie Strong can sit there and go through the litany of problems that they have and everything that he has had to change over at Texas so far. There isn't a single fan in Texas that wants to hear that. They want to know why the hell you're 1-3 right now or 1-4. Yeah, but I've got this. But No. I want to, because fans do not want excuses. They don't want excuses in general. I mean, there's some that understand, but in general, they don't want to hear excuses. And I remember last year in going around to various groups and talking, and I said, look, 14 is going to be a very much up and down season. I was very direct with everybody. How many times did I say this on this show a summer ago that 14 had was a year that Bill O'Brien was worried about, very concerned about? And I said, you know, because of the way the team is, it's going to be a very up and down year. And I didn't know what to expect from the football team. There was no rosy blue glass, you know, half full, like, oh, you know, this is going to be great, unbelievable, I'm looking good, blah, blah. No, not in the least. I was 180 of that. Very realistic and explained to everybody and explaining what the sanctions had done. I think what has happened is that because of the NCAA givebacks, you know, that's kind of an odd way of putting it, but it's the best I can come up with at the moment. It is perceived that everything's now back to normal. That's it. They're done. Back to normal. So I don't want to hear any excuses. Okay? Back to normal. Done. Okay? You got everything you need. You had 25 scholarships. You can go to 85, blah, blah, blah. You're normal. Okay? They don't want to hear me tell them that in reality, normalcy is still probably 2 years away. They don't want to hear me say that, even though I know it. They don't want to hear me say it. And there are reasons why I know it, based on how a football team is built and how the development of certain parts of a football team have to happen to make it happen. But the average fan wants to know, okay, you're 4-1. You never should have lost to Temple, okay? And not only that, you're 4-1 and not ranked. Look how far they've fallen, da-da-da-da, and everything like that. Okay. All right? So in a normal situation, yeah, okay, I can see where everybody's coming from. But I know that it's not normal yet, that it's creeping closer to it. And because of the fact that they're allowed to now get back to a full 85 and the whole thing, and they're able to recruit the way they're recruiting, they've accelerated the process of getting there, that the process of being normal is now not going to be 2019 or 2020. It's probably going to be 2017. But, you know, you want people to be excited and coming into the stadium, too, and there's a fine line between getting people excited about the future of Penn State football, but at the same time also trying to be realistic about the current situation. And it's very difficult to skirt each side of that line. It's very difficult to skirt each side of that line, excitement combined with current realism. Now, okay, as... that's part of what I'm supposed to do. That's part of my job, to be realistic, but also let you know at the same time that I think the future is extremely bright, because both to me are the complete truth. Right now, there's still an effect where normalcy is not there yet that every program operates under. I mean, Indiana, I mean, Kevin Wilson's in his fifth year. He's able to at least has had a whole series of teams where he's been able to build and do the whole thing instead of trying to play catch-up scholarship-wise. I mean, as I told people before, what does it tell you that Penn State in the last 18 months has given out 51 scholarships and it still only got you to 77? What does that tell you? That's the max allowed that they could have brought in. And it still only got you to 77. How far behind does that tell you they were? I mean, realistically. Now, but does anybody want to hear that? No, they want to know what the heck happened against Army, which I understand. Again, like you, I thought they would win that game probably 17, 20, 21 points, something like that. Really, I mean, dude, so I'm just like you. I thought the same thing, right? I thought the same thing. But there's still that fine line that still exists. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Like I said, you're at a point where, okay, there isn't a program in the country right now where the fan base is happy. Anywhere. Is the Alabama fan base happy?
No.
No?
Ohio State isn't.
No, the Ohio State fan base is not happy. The Alabama fan base is not happy. The Oregon fan base, absolutely unhappy. The TCU fan base probably is happy. They're just thrilled to kind of be there and, like, be in the conversation. The Michigan State fan base is not happy this week. I mean, they should have beaten Purdue by more than 3 points. You know, I mean, so let me tell you a quick story Mac McWhorter told me. Greg Davis was the offensive coordinator for years at Texas. And Mac, of course, was the offensive line coach of the Texas staff under Mac Brown. And Mac was telling me this a couple of weeks ago. He said that Greg Davis, who's now the coordinator at Iowa, so, you know, he left after Mac left. He's down in Grapevine one day, and this fan comes up to him in a store, and he says, "I just want to tell you," he says, "for 12 years, I cussed you out. I cussed you out for 12 years. I just want to tell you how much I miss you." That's a good one. Suddenly you realize what you've lost once they're gone.
I don't think I'll ever have that feeling with Ruben Amaro, though.
No, but I'm saying, though, they won the national championship in 2005. Now, having Vince Young didn't hurt them. But, you know, again, we're in an era now that no matter what program it is, I don't care if it's the NFL, college basketball, college football, any, you know, your team, hey, fans don't want to hear excuses. They want to see results and wins. You want to know why? You want to know why? Because everybody pays a lot of money for what they see today. When everything was upped financially across the board in every sport, and people had to really pay a lot, there are no $2 bleacher seats out there anymore. People want to feel like they're investing their money in something that they think is exciting. Right? Because let's face it, you bust your backsides to earn your money. You make choices as to what to do with your entertainment dollar. So you want your team, whether it's Penn State or the Philly, whomever it happens to be good because you've invested that money.